Listener, beware. The following is a cautionary tale of two friends venturing into a world of magic and monsters, haunted houses, weeping cryptids, fairy food trucks, and other absurdities. This is Spooklore.
Hi. Okay, so I'm still processing your last message, but just to briefly sum up, you are bewitching people with ancient Nordic mythical recipes that you've never even heard of, and being rescued from your enchanted hillbillies by a folklorist who looks great with his shirt off. I'm gonna need a minute. I did the whole Giles removing his glasses thing like 3 times when I was listening to that story, just to give you a visual. Listen. I will say that if there was ever anyone who wouldn't immediately notice people suddenly breaking out into iambic pentameter or waxing rhapsodic about barbecue sauce, I could conceivably believe that of you. This is really the problem with Much Ado or Twelfth Night being formative films for us both, you know? Reality always feels like kind of a pale imitation of how life should be. At any rate, I highly support these flirtatious obstructions of yours, as well as further occasions of getting the folklorist all bare-chested and agitated again, but it does sound like he has some credible concerns about what you're up to. I'm not saying that you should be doing anything differently, but it does sort of sound like you're being a little bit enchanted yourself, which again, not necessarily a problem. Who am I to talk, right? But it also seems like these enchantments are escalating a little bit, and it would probably behoove you to try to figure out why. I mean, it's not like I'm any kind of authority on magical missions, but I generally think that if you're going to be a willing vessel for weird and ancient magic, it might be good to go into it with full knowledge of what it is that you're getting yourself into, right? But, speaking of magical missions, there have been further developments over here. It started this morning, when I found a key in the back of a wardrobe in one of those upstairs rooms, which is crazy because I've searched the house high and low, but it feels like one of those annoying objects that only shows up when you've stopped looking or forgotten about it. Anyway, I just had this feeling as soon as I found it that it belonged to Linnea's sea cave, so I decided to walk down to the shore and try it in the lock to see if I could get inside. The lock was pretty stiff and rusted over, but eventually I heard a click, and the door creaked open. When I stepped inside, I found myself in this antechamber that was way bigger than I would have guessed from the outside. There were long shelves set into the stone walls. At first, I thought maybe it was a pantry because there were literally hundreds of bundles of grasses and flowers and herbs on the shelves, but there were also keepsakes and artifacts, these perfect stones with crocheted cozies made of seagrass and whittled objects carved from driftwood and candles and shells all arranged with the very clear purpose in mind. It was like this library of precious found things, and the chamber sort of wound deep into the rock, you know, the way caves do, and opened into this bigger, rounder space where there was a hearth carved into the stone with one of those Victorian kettles that swung over the fire and a work table in the middle of the room. I knew what Linnea meant when she said she instantly felt at home in there because, Nikki, I did too. It felt like it was a place that wanted to shelter someone who would use it well and love it, you know, and someone who needed it. It just felt really warm and quiet and safe. Even with the wind gusting through the chimney and the ocean crashing outside, it just weirdly felt like home. But I wasn't really sure what it was that I was hoping to find until, well, I found it. There was an old grass-bound journal on one of the shelves, which was overflowing with Linnea's notes and recipes and rituals. Nikki, your anthropologist heart would have died if you'd seen it. And there was this particular ritual that was bookmarked toward the back of the journal, Linnea's handwriting was kind of shaky and slanted on that page, so it was a little hard to interpret, but the ritual seemed to be about binding and unbinding souls to a person, or maybe to a place. I think this must have been the spell that Linnea referred to, you know, the one that she said didn't work. I wonder if she was trying to unbind herself from that asshole husband of hers to set herself free, or maybe she was trying to bind his soul to something else. I feel a little reticent to ask, to be honest, because she just seemed so unwilling to talk about it, but I can't help but wonder if I might be able to use the spell to unbind her from the house. You know, if she could travel through the world again and walk along the shoreline, I think it would just make her feel so much happier and less trapped by all of the miserable memories from the end of her life. Like, maybe this is why I was called here, to try to help Linnea. Maybe I was meant to do this. But I also have some reasonable concerns. What if I tried to set her free and her spirit just went poof? What if she faded into nothing? Honestly, maybe that would be better for her, but obviously I can't make that choice for her. And if she did want me to try, I don't know if I could even do it. For all my proclamations about becoming a sea witch, I don't actually know if I am one. I mean, you seem to be cooking up spells on the daily, and you don't seem to doubt yourself for a second, but over here I am full of doubts. I know this is awkward, but could you maybe ask that handsome folklorist dude of yours about soul-binding rituals? Maybe he'll know something that could help me. Linnea's notes presume a lot of knowledge that I don't have, so any further information would be a big help. And, you know, if you end up making out with him at some point in the process, so much the better.
Annie, dearest, you know by now that the quippier I am, the more I am riddled with self-doubt, right? I have no goddamn idea what I'm doing, and I am about to prove that to you 100%. Hell, I don't know. I'd love to ask Neil about soul binding, but he's not exactly speaking to me right now. I will explain, but before I do, let me just dissociate for a moment and imagine myself in your library of found things, which sounds like absolutely the mind palace of my dreams, and I'm just gonna go there and not be here in my frankly pretty disgusting food truck that is covered with Jicky sex fruit, and it's all my fault. I'm in Oklahoma right now, which is one dry state, let me tell you, so I really ought to have been a bit more suspicious, or at least a little less cocky, and tra-la-la, I do magic food. I am an idiot. Feel free to say I told you so, because you did, and I am aware. Oh, god damn, it's hot. Like 11 million degrees hot. Which is not making the smell in here any better, I have to tell you. And I think maybe Squonk is mad at me, because they're not weeping that much. And like, I'm trying to wonder if their generally slushy nature is a positive thing. Like, it's a happy cry? Because we're pretty bone dry in here, and that's not helpful because I definitely need to mop. Yes, I am avoiding. Okay. I went out to forage as per usual, and Squonk came with me like the truffle pig of magic they are, and we came across this orchard, which, yes, Oklahoma is not known for its fruit, but I don't know, magic. I've just been going with it, you know? And yes, I know Neil very explicitly told me not to do that, and by the way, he is much less handsome when he's being all, I told you so. Whatever, I picked the fruit. I didn't even know what they all were. I mean, I recognized some of them. Apples, melons, raspberries, peaches, pomegranates, strawberries, pineapples, apricots, blackberries, god, so many, many more. And yes, clearly they all don't ordinarily grow in the same orchard. I hauled back an enormous load, and Squonk complained the entire time, but I figured they were just grouchy. When we got back to Bartleby, I set to it, cooking up pies and cordials and jellies and jams and candies. It was like Bartleby was demented, frenzied. I couldn't move fast enough, and we just made more and more and more. And Annie, ugh. You've never smelled fruit like this. Luscious and sweet and strong, almost overwhelmingly potent. I didn't taste any of it. I didn't have time. And, well, I guess that was the saving of me. There's a part of me, a very stupid part of me, that kinda wishes I had. Because what must it have tasted like? How could I not want to know? So after I finished all my baking, we pulled into Freedom, Oklahoma. Yep, that's its name, and set up shop. At first, only young girls came, which was kind of weird. Sisters, it seemed like, or maybe a couple of close friends, and they ate the fruit and it was like life came into them, like they put an Instagram filter on their souls. They sparkled and they laughed and it was joyous and I felt like, yes, I am magical! Look at what I'm doing! Look at what I'm creating! I know. It's so stupid. And then more girls came, and then some other women, and then some men, and like, I'd made so much fruit, but I was seriously starting to run out, which has never happened before, and everyone was craving more, more, more. Annie, they came into Bartleby. They pushed through the doors. They even crawled up through the ordering window like the zombies in zombie movies. They started smothering me, and I started screaming, and then somebody grabbed me, and I was screaming and kicking and trying to get away. But then they pulled me out, and it turns out it was Neil, and then I was crying, and he was holding me, and then he pushed me away because he had to run back to get Squonk. We stood a little ways away from it all. I had no idea what was going to happen to Bartleby, and I looked down, and I was just covered in this stuff, like all the fruit juice had gotten all over me somehow, all pulp and peels and ugh. And Neil looked at me all horrified, and it was all over him too because he'd been holding me, and he pulled me over to a fire hydrant and just bashed at it until it opened, and then he basically hosed me down and we were absolutely soaking wet. I know what you're thinking, but let me tell you, that's not what happened. What happened is Neil started screaming at me about goblin fruit and pointing at Bartleby, where folks were pretty much just licking up all over each other, which might sound sexy, but was not. And we had to just kind of sit there dripping while this whole Christina Rossetti bacchanal played out in my food truck. It did mercifully end at last, at which point Neil decided it was a good idea to yell at me some more. He used a lot of words like irresponsible and thoughtless, and he maybe even snuck a stupid in there, which ordinarily I'd be mad about, but it is a little deserved. And then he drove off in a huff, leaving me to clean up my mess. It's so gross, Annie. Poor Bartleby has been tainted. I'm gonna buckle down, and then I'm gonna be a little more, conscientious about my foraging and cooking choices. But I don't know. I hear you about claiming the title of Sea Witch and then feeling like a pretender. We don't actually know what's happening to us, what's been placed on us, or what to do with it, but something has led us here. I do think you have been called to help Linnea, and I do think I've been called to do something. There's a point to all of this, is all I mean. I can feel it. Which is to say, I think you should try the soulbinding spell. I think that is what you are meant to do.
Nikki? Holy crap. I don't even know how to respond to this. I mean, first of all, ugh. And second of all, I'm really glad you're okay and that Neil got you out of that situation. And thirdly, poor Bartleby. And fourthly, ugh, again. Let me just say, when you first told me about Bartleby, my initial reaction was that it would probably be really good for you to take a break from your academic brain and just delve fully into this intuitive foraging life. Like, after the past year of feeling so thwarted creatively, this seemed like such a cool way for you to explore a less logical way of creating things. But I think these latest misadventures of yours are evidence that perhaps the pendulum has swung a degree too far in that direction, and it's time to bring the more practical academic part of you back into it. Clearly, you are working with some serious power, which doesn't surprise me in the least because you are objectively a badass. But maker of witchy food spells and accomplished anthropologist don't need to be separate identities or even at odds with each other, you know? Maybe they could work in tandem to do remarkable things without recklessly instigating spontaneous orgies. Anyway, if we need to do some parts work around this, just let me know. Also, sexiness aside, it sounds like Neil has some information that might be useful. So I just would encourage you to learn as much as you can before your Bartleby shenanigans get too out of hand. And speaking of ill-advised magical schemes with undetermined consequences, I've decided that I am going to attempt the soulbinding spell, the unbinding spell, rather, to try to release Linnea from the house. I've been gathering as much information as I can over the past couple of days and reading through all of her notes again and again, The weird thing is that I'm realizing her being trapped in the house isn't just a typical haunting thing. According to my research, it seems like while some ghosts refuse to leave the places where they live, nothing seems to preclude it. You know, in looking more deeply into this ritual, Linnea's binding seems like something she did to herself, weirdly. I don't really understand why she would do that to herself, or maybe if this was like an unintended consequence of the spell, and, you know, obviously I'm a little concerned that the spell could backfire on me. But I'm also having this fantasy of doing the spell and then opening the door and coaxing Linnea outside, and like, I may not be able to see the look on her face, but I know I'll be able to feel her reaction. I just want her to have that freedom and to try to undo some of the damage that was done to her. I don't want her afterlife to be condemned by her awful husband the way her life was. If we have the power to change this, then I think we should. Okay, so one thing I should mention. You know how I've been spending this time in the sea cave to prepare for the spell? Well, one thing I didn't really notice the first time I was inside is that there's another door in the very back of the cave. It seems like it might lead to an even deeper cavern in the cliff, but I also got this kind of intense feeling of foreboding from it. You know, when Linnea first mentioned that she felt unsafe in the cavern, I couldn't really understand it because it honestly feels like the loveliest, coziest space in the world to me, but I think there might be something behind that door. Something she wants to stay hidden. I don't know, whatever it is, honestly, I don't have any real desire to find out. And before you get all sassy again, I'm pretty sure she doesn't have literal skeletons in the closet, but after I do the unbinding spell, I'm going to try to find a cleansing spell to try to banish that dark energy, whatever it is. For now, I'm just gonna let that door stay locked and hope for the best. So the plan is to do the soul binding spell tonight. I'll report back and let you know how it goes. Hoping the cleanup isn't too bad for Bartleby. More soon.
Perceptions give me panic attacks. So when I am out, I'm not behind trees. I'll hide in the forest where I can be free. Maybe to you it sounds a little strange, but maybe I can be a supermodel, skinny, kind of pretty girl. Maybe I wanna be a cryptid. Maybe I don't wanna exist in this world. And everyone's comments shine in the scars. Everyone lies and says, be who you are. What if I wanna be a cryptid? Maybe my ideal body is Bigfoot.
Spooklore is written, produced, and performed by Annie Wild and Nikki Vandikar. Our closing credit song is Cryptid Mothman by Ratwife. Further misadventures can be found on patreon.com/spooklore and on Instagram at spooklorepodcast. Any resemblance to persons or cryptids, living or dead, is entirely coincidental.
Put in the crying cryptid, wishing I could melt into swamps. Beady red eyes can't see beauty standards, and stealing someone's skin would hide all my flaws. Maybe I can't be a supermodel, skinny kind of pretty girl. Maybe I wanna be a cryptid. Maybe I don't wanna exist in this world. When everyone's comments shine in the scars, when everyone lies and says, be who you are. What if I wanna be a cryptid? Maybe my ideal body is Mothman.